Aloha mai kakou. This is John Tilton, Senior Pastor of New Hope Oahu. In a moment, a message from our founding pastor, Wayne Cordero, on Words of New Hope.
And it was up against the fence. There's a fence up front here where the weeds grow the highest. And he was saying, go pull the weeds out and pick up the rubbish that all blows up against the fence and catches. I thought, no way, that stuff is dirty. Just see cars going by on the road right here. I could see a mother stopping at the stoplight, looking at me and then yelling at her son. See that man over there doing community service? If you don't listen to your mother, you're gonna end up just like him. Yeah, look at that and learn and learn. Listen to your mother.
Welcome to Words of New Hope with Dr. Wayne Cordero. You know, the Bible has a lot to say about compassion. Jesus looked upon the multitudes with compassion. He said they were like sheep with no shepherd. And as Christians, we are to show compassion to the lost. But did you know that with compassion comes certain risks? Here is Pastor Wayne with a message entitled, The Risk of Compassion.
I'm going to talk about taking risks, especially something I want to call the risk of compassion. The risk of compassion. Every day you're going to take risks. From the beginning of life itself, when a child takes his first step, he's taking a risk. When you go out of this place and you go onto the H1 freeway, you take a risk. Yeah, you got a 2-ton projectile coming at you over 60 miles an hour, passing you by within inches. And the only thing that keeps you apart from the other is a little bit of paint on the asphalt. That's it. There's a lot of risk. Whenever you ride a fly in an airplane, you're taking a risk. When you buy a house, you're taking a risk. When you're getting a job, you're taking a risk. When you play a sport, you're taking a risk. Everything of life has to do with taking a risk. And many of the people of Hawaii take a risk when they go to Las Vegas, and away we go. Plane loads of Hawaiians heading up there to pull on the one-armed bandit. And there is more of a risk for them returning home to get on welfare than to be a millionaire. Isn't that right? Risk. All of life is about risks. And now some risks are bigger than others. Some you don't want to take. It'd be foolish to take. As is a story that I heard of this Portuguese monastery. Now, this Portuguese monastery in Portugal was 200-300 feet on this cliff, and tourists used to love to go up there because the monastery was peaceful, it was a respite, and it had a beautiful view. The only problem is the only way to get up there is with a basket hauled up by a rope pulled by some Portuguese monks. But yet tourists would still go, and one tourist was in the basket and he was kind of a little concerned here. There's a big risk here. Halfway up, he noticed that the rope that the basket was attached to was old and actually fraying. He turns to the monk that's riding in the basket with him, and with a trembling voice, this tourist asks the monks, said, how often do you change the rope? And the monk looks at him and says, whenever it breaks. Not a good risk to take. Not a good risk. And you take a risk here in Hawaii whenever you park your car and lock it, because you have a risk of it being stolen. Did you know that there are certain cars that have a higher risk of getting stolen than others? You want to know what the top 5 cars are that get stolen? Just so that you can check your own car. Here it is. The highest risk of getting stolen are these cars. Number one, if you drive a BMW Roadster, you better chain it to a fire hydrant every time you park it. That is the top stolen car in the U.S. in this last year. The next one, Acura Integra. Yeah, if you got one of those, sell it. And the third is an Audi S4, then Honda Civic, and check this out, and a Cadillac Escalade. The top 5 stolen cars in the U.S. You want to find out what the least stolen cars are? Yeah, you'll like these. Yeah, if you drive these, you don't even have to worry. The least stolen car, if you have a Ford Taurus, no problem. No problem. Buick LeSabre is the next Dodge Dart. And you want to know the of all time, the least stolen car? Ford Pinto. That's right. You can leave this car running with the keys in the ignition. And it's impossible to get stolen. Nobody's going to steal that thing. Risk. If you learn the probabilities of risk, you can get a little streetwise. And it's not good to take major risks, but did you know that there's a group of people that God is looking for, searching for, that take risks? It was I was reading a book by C.T. Studd, which is a preacher of yesteryear, and I came across a sentence that was emblazoned onto my soul, indelibly etched in there. I've never forgotten it. He said this. He said, "The gamblers for gold are so many, but the gamblers for God are so few. Where are the gamblers for God?" And I wrote in the leaflet of that book, "I shall be a gambler for God." Signed my name and dated it. God's looking for those men and women who will take risks for the kingdom. In fact, the whole success of the book of Acts is based on that. In Acts 15, it says this, that the success of the early church was based on, here it is, men and women who risked their lives for the name of Jesus Christ. Risk? Uh-huh. But when it comes to God, when he's looking at the risks that we take, I call the risks of compassion, God doesn't see it as risks. He sees it as men and women of great faith. Did you know that all of us can convert risk into great faith? In fact, that's how faith is developed. It's not by going to a bunch of conferences and seminars. It is by taking risks of compassion in the name of Christ. And that risk becomes what the Bible calls faith. And this is what Hebrews says. And without that kind of faith, it's impossible to please God. For those who come to him must believe that he is. And that is, he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. You say, really? Can I take a risk and do it in the name of Christ and it becomes faith? Sure. Sure. And God rewards it. It was just some time ago that a church raised $100,000. And it was Sherwood Baptist Church of Albany, Georgia, to make a film. And they put a film together with all volunteers. It was called Facing the Giants. Some of you saw it. Did you know that film came out and it spoke about the Lord in every way? $100,000. And in the Baptist press, as of January 1st, that film has grossed $10 million. If you think about that, that's a hundredfold return. Was it a risk? Absolutely. Big risk. Big risk. But without faith, it's impossible to please him. For those who come to him must believe that he is, and that he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. You see, really, can we actually be men and women of risk that God converts to faith? Absolutely, every single one of us can. How? Would you write in number one, risk becomes faith when it is love for God and people that compels me to be involved. It is love for God and people that compels me to be involved. And that's exactly what we're going to find in Mark chapter 1. Jesus examples faith in risks. In those days, a leper was someone that you stayed away from. You would cut a large swath around a leper. In fact, if there was a person who was a leper, they were mandated to carry a bell. And whenever they would see anyone that was not leprous, or what they would call clean, they'd have to start ringing that bell furiously and start to this litany. They'd have to say, "Unclean, unclean, unclean," so that people will be warned and they go to the other side of the street. You don't go near one, you don't touch one. But watch how you will see a phrase, "moved with compassion," and Jesus gets involved, and let's see what happens. At the top of our notes, would you read it with me? Right at the top, go. A leper came to Jesus, beseeching him and falling on his knees before him and saying, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." And moved with compassion, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, "I am willing, be cleansed." And immediately the leprosy left him and he was cleansed. Would you underline two phrases? The first is moved with compassion. You're going to see that phrase precede several miracles in the New Testament and being moved with compassion. seeing that they were like sheep without a shepherd, moved with compassion. In fact, let's read in Matthew 20 under number 1, another time where it said, let's read it, go. Moved with compassion, Jesus touched their eyes and immediately they regained their sight. And you've seen risks of compassion like that before. You'll see it in a cancer ward where kids that have lost their hair, eyebrows, eyelashes, that might be to some people a bit scary. But you'll see 3 or 4 volunteers hugging these kids and kissing them and giving them piggyback rides and playing games with them. And if you interview these adults, why do you have such compassion for these cancer victims? Inevitably, at least 50% of them will have had a child that had cancer and may have lost that child. And now, in its place, God displaced that child with a huge amount of compassion for those kids suffering with that. You understand? And then they are willing to go right in the midst of those kinds of kids because of a risk of compassion. You see, would you write down in that little bullet, the greater the compassion, the lesser the sacrifice. The greater the compassion, it's not a sacrifice. We've seen that with Mother Teresa, how she would get up in the mornings in Calcutta and she would collect those who had died overnight, the poor and impoverished, the destitute, the unclaimed, the discarded people of humanity. And she would pick them up and she'd give them a fair burial. And those that were lepers or those that were disfigured, those that were street people, she would love, she would hug, she would lay hands on them, pray for them. And you'd think, how can someone do that, get involved and risk that much? The greater the compassion, the lesser the sacrifice. You watch people that get involved with things because they love God and love what He's doing. And you ask them, is it a sacrifice? You know what? Sacrifice turns to joy when you include the ingredient of compassion and love. Sacrifice turns to joy. Pharisees didn't understand that. That's why when they were saying, hey, we're religious, look at all we're doing, the Lord actually dismisses them from class. And let's read what He says here. Go. But go and learn what this means. I desire compassion and not sacrifice. He actually says, go, get out of here. Go back to school, learn what this means. I need compassion, not sacrifice. Because when you do, you get involved, you start to serve here in a ministry, and it's because of love, not because of accolades, not because of what you'll get from it, not because of how many people applaud, but just, I just love God, and I want to be a part of what He's doing. And I want to do that because of compassion for God, for people. And anything that would have been a sacrifice turns to joy. I was just talking recently to one of our receptionists, and some of you know all of our receptionists are all volunteer. And we have one office manager, Eva, and she schedules everybody. And then ladies come in and they volunteer to answer phones and talk to people as they call and direct them to certain areas for help and information. And one lady has a day off in the middle of the week, and I found out that on her day off, she comes in and serves. I thought, her day off and she comes in? And so I went up to her and I said, can I just say thank you for the sacrifice that you make every week on your day off? You come in and answer phones. She looked at me almost incredulous. She said, sacrifice? So I look forward to this. Every week I look forward to my day off so that I can come into this office, because as I come here, it buoys my spirit. It lifts me up emotionally. It gives me a refreshed, positive attitude so that when I go to my other job, I'm a better person. She said, no, you don't need to thank. I need to thank you. And then I thought, wow, sacrifice was whoop, turned to joy because of the compassion. And doing what she did it out of love for God and love for people. And without that kind of faith, it's impossible to please God. For those who come to Him must believe that He is, and here it is, and that He's a rewarder of those who seek Him. God will reward, and you'll see the great joy of serving. There's a huge joy in serving. The greater the love, the lesser the sacrifice. But you know, I notice another thing about serving and getting involved and taking a risk, even though you don't think you've got all of the skills. Something happens. You learn so much. I remember I was 3 months old in the Lord when I went into Bible college, very young. And 2 months later, I was in a men's Bible study with some CEOs at a restaurant one day a week, Tuesdays, and someone had invited me and I enjoyed it. And it was early in the morning and I kept going. Well, the leader was to move, and finding out that I was a Bible college student, thinking that I must be a veteran in the things of God when I was only 5 months old in the Lord, he came to me and said, "Hey, Wayne, I wanted to ask if you would take over this Bible study every Tuesday with these businessmen." And I thought, no way. And just then I heard the Lord say, "Yes, way." I thought, no way. He said, "Yes, way." And I found myself saying, "Yes, way." And then I thought, what have I done? This is too great of a risk. I don't know what to do. And so you know what I did? That next week, I went home and I studied like a maniac. I rubbed my knees into the carpet. I got up. I fasted one of the days because of this Bible study coming up. And then I shared, and they must have liked it. So I came back the next week and I just started studying and studying and studying. Now, that at the end of that year, I don't think they learned anything, but man, I grew tons. And you know what I realized? A lot of times God asks us to get involved, not because we got it all together or we're God's gift to humankind. God has us involved because there's so much we need to learn. In fact, it's almost mandatory. You know why? Let's write in number two. Would you write it in two? Risk becomes faith when I realize that serving is God's design for growth. It's God's design for growth. Listen carefully. You're going to learn half of what you're going to learn at times like this, from sermons, messages, seminars, and conferences. Half of what you're going to learn in that way. But you know where you're going to learn the other half? You have to pass through the servant's entrance. It's not by putting on a name tag that you went to this conference. It will come from you putting on an apron and serving. Because it's there in the midst of serving that you're going to learn people skills. You're going to learn punctuality. You're going to learn how to overcome some desires to quit. You're going to learn humility. You're going to understand how to overlook other people's faults and how to be humble about your own. You're going to learn consistency, perseverance, constancy, work ethic. You're going to learn disciplines and self-disciplines. You're going to learn so many things that will only be found not in a classroom, but out in through the servants' quarters. And it's a part of God's design for growth. Because if you just sit in classrooms, we'll become really good Pharisees. Folks, listen, in every single one of us is a little Pharisee just waiting to grow up. And if we think Christianity is just going from one conference to another seminar to another classroom to another this, we will become excellent Pharisees. But God never said, go out and make Pharisees of all the world. He said, go out and make disciples of all nations. The only way that we're going to become disciples is we've got to understand that we must put on an apron and begin to serve, because half, 50% of what you're going to learn, you're going to learn as you go through the servants' quarters. That's just how God designed it. That's His mandate. That's His invitation. And did you know, by the way, that's also where God does His best work. You see, if you want to be the best world-class concert pianist you could be, you know what you're going to look for? You're going to look for the best coach there is. Isn't that right? And you're going to move there. That's why some people move to Nashville, because they have some of the best producers there and artists there and coaches there. Or in the medieval times and in the Renaissance, many people moved to Rome or from Rome to Florence because that's where the greatest minds were. The artists, Michelangelo, Raphael, the Medici family, all of these people were up there. And so they thought, that's where we need to go to learn our artwork. Well, if you want to be the best golfer there is, then you're going to find the best golf coach. And you're going to move there to be coached by that person. If you want to be the best soccer player, you're going to find the best soccer coach. And you're going to try and get on with them, because you want to be where the best coach is. Well, I tell you, if you want to be the best you can be for the Lord, then you need to find out where He's teaching. Where's that? Isn't He everywhere? Yeah, but let me share with you what Luke 22 says. I think you'll like it. Let's read this under number two. Go. The one who is the greatest among you must become like the youngest, and a leader like the servant. For who is greater, the one who reclines at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who reclines at the table? Watch this. But I am among you as the one who... Yeah, here's what he's saying. Who's more important in the eyes of the world? The people at the head table or the busboys? Well, obviously, well, the head table people. Jesus says, but you know where you're going to find me? I'm going to be among those who serve. In other words, if I want to be around the greatest coach and mentor there is, then where are you going to find him? At the head table? Where are you going to find him? Among those who serve. So I know that if I'm going to be coached by him and be mentored by him, then I've got to be a part of the servant's enclave, the group of servants that serve. And so it's a part of the growth program that God invites us to enter. And that's where he does the best work of all. I always think about Joseph. You know, Joseph arguably became the second most important and powerful man in the world. Because there was a vast, huge, intense famine that took place. And people from all the surrounding nations would go to Egypt to see if they could get food. Now, the one who would oversee the food distribution was a man named Joseph. He had to know how to organize, how to store food. He had to distribute it correctly, etc., all the record keeping. Why he was so powerful, he would decide who would live and who would die. Now, where would you train such a powerful man? If you were God, what school would you send that one to get all the training necessary to have the organizational skills, the people skills, the abilities, all the logistical skills that would be necessary? Would you send him to Harvard? Would you send him to Princeton? Maybe send them over to Oxford. Instead, God sent him to jail. In other words, God is saying, it doesn't matter what location you're in. I can teach you if you're willing to draw near to me wherever you are. It was in prison. Sometimes we say, well, I'll serve if you've got a, you know, lights are set up and a symphony behind me, and then maybe I'll serve. No, the Lord says, no, I might have you wash toilets or pick up rubbish. Yeah, but that's kind of beneath me. You know, it's there that often we get our hearts scrubbed. And what we need the most, I remember we used to have men's ministries here. And after men's ministries, we would pick up rubbish. And I thought, well, I've got some hours, 3 hours or so, I'm going to pick up rubbish. So they gave me a big black bag. And with all the men, we were picking up rubbish. And I noticed the principal was in her office over here. So I thought, wouldn't it be nice if she could see what we're doing to her campus? So I decide I'm going to go and pick up rubbish outside her window. And just pick up rubbish. You know, with great humility, of course, great humility. I'd pick up rubbish and I'd look up and she'd be staring out the window. And then I'd pick up rubbish and I could just hear the Lord say, you sham. This is a bunch of fakery. And this is what I heard the Lord say. Don't pick up rubbish where someone can see you and applaud you and think you're so holy. Go pick up rubbish where nobody can see you. And it was up against the fence. There's a fence up front here where the weeds grow the highest. And he was saying, go pull the weeds out and pick up the rubbish that all blows up against the fence and catches. And I thought, no way, that stuff is dirty. But he compelled me so much, I remember going, oh, no, I'm dragging my bag. And so I'm pulling up weeds, and it's just no fun. I'm thinking, oh, God, this is so lowly. And I could just see cars going by on the road right here. I could see a mother stopping at the stoplight, looking at me, and then yelling at her son, her little boy, you know, hey, see that man over there doing community service? If you don't listen to your mother, you're going to end up just like him. Yeah, look at that, and learn, and learn. Listen to your mother. Look at that man. You're not that old. But you know, there's so much that God will teach us. Isn't that right? In the midst of certain, you would never learn those things. You would never have his light shine on areas of your heart that you never thought had arrogance in it or pride in it. But every single one of us has some measure of pride in us. But those things will never be seen nor discovered except in the group of servants, because that is where God does his best work. you understand? 50% you'll learn here. 50% you'll learn on the other side of the servants' quarters.
Until next time, for Pastor Wayne Cordero, this is Del Gibbs wishing you a great day in the Lord and aloha.
Hi, this is Wayne Cordero. There's a church, New Hope West, right on our beautiful Bible College campus in Eugene, Oregon. It's time for the Word of God to live in each of us in a way that'll change our lives and the world in which we live. So join us at New Hope West on our Bible College campus, 2155 Bailey Hill Road in Eugene, Oregon. We'll see you there.
Celebrate Easter at New Hope Oahu, featuring special guest, Tarius. Services will be held on Saturday, April 8th at 6 p.m. and Sunday, April 9th at 7, 9:15, and 11:30 a.m. at our home at 290 Sand Island Access Road. Live Japanese, Chinese, and American Sign Language translations will be available at select services. Discover hope this Easter at New Hope Oahu. For more info, visit enewhope.org.